Look, it's Tuesday, May 12th. Today we're looking at a world that feels increasingly like it's running on two different tracks. On one side, you've got a high-level geopolitical standoff with Iran, and on the other, a domestic reality where people can't even agree on whether what they see on the news is actually happening. Plus, following up on our look at the semiconductor crunch, it turns out your next gaming console might cost you a lot more, because AI data centers are eating all the chips. Let's get into it. President Trump has officially rejected a nuclear negotiation framework proposed by Iran. The decision keeps the two countries locked in a long-standing stalemate, primarily because they can't agree on the future of Iran's nuclear program. This isn't just about a piece of paper. We're seeing the consequences of this friction in real time. It's the same old story. Nobody wants a full-scale war. But nobody is willing to blink first, so we just keep idling in this dangerous middle ground. While things are stalled with Iran, the White House is turning its attention toward Beijing. Analysts are drawing comparisons to the 2017 visit, but they're noting the vibe this time around would be very different. Back then, there was a sense of two powers feeling each other out. Now, President Xi Jinping is operating from a position of much greater global power and confidence. China is increasingly positioning itself as the stable adult in the room, a counterweight to what they describe as U.S. volatility. It doesn't help that the U.S. is currently distracted by the mess in the Middle East. It's a complete flip of the script. We used to be the ones lecturing the world on stability. Now we're the ones showing up to the meeting with a million domestic fires burning in the background, while China sits back and watches us sweat. Speaking of domestic fires, we have some new data on just how deep the conspiratorial rot has settled into the American psyche. A recent survey shows that a significant chunk of the population believes the assassination attempts against President Trump were staged. There's a massive divide here along partisan and age lines, but the core fact is that a lot of people simply do not believe the official record, despite there being zero evidence to support the staged theory. Look. When a huge portion of the country thinks everything they see on the news is a choreographed play, you don't really have a functioning society anymore. You just have two different groups of people living in two different realities, yelling at each other through a screen. On the policy side of things, there's a lot of talk about what happens to the Republican Party after Trump. According to the Know Your Enemy podcast, there is a real question about whether MAGA can even exist without its frontman. The GOP is currently struggling to figure out how to consolidate power without Trump's specific celebrity appeal. It's a movement built on a person, not necessarily a platform. At the same time, the Democrats aren't exactly knocking it out of the park. They're struggling to offer a compelling alternative to voters who have basically checked out, mostly because they lack a clear message or anyone with real charisma to deliver it. It's a grass-is-always-greener situation, except both lawns are currently on fire. There's also this weird intellectual shift happening on the right towards something called post-liberalism. Figures like Trump have embraced the rhetoric, but as Know Your Enemy pointed out, there's a massive contradiction there. Post-liberalism, at its core, is often a theological critique of the market. It's supposed to be about skepticism of big corporations and commodification. But in practice, it just gets used to fuel culture wars, while the actual economic systems stay exactly the same. It's essentially a fancy academic wrapper for the same old grievances. They talk about rebuilding the commons, but they usually just end up talking about who gets to use which bathroom. Switching gears to public health, a record-breaking heat wave is about to slam 22 states. We're talking about millions of people facing temperatures well over 100 degrees, which is going to make the existing droughts even worse. We keep calling these record events, but at this point the record is just the new baseline. It's a shitty situation for farmers and anyone without reliable AC. And it's a reminder that while we're arguing about political theory, the planet is just getting objectively harder to live on. There's also some new research out about the invisible stuff that's killing us. Specifically plastic chemicals. Scientists have found that exposure to these chemicals, which are linked to heart and metabolic diseases, can be cut down significantly if you just change how you shop. Avoiding plastic packaging and ultra-processed foods actually makes a measurable difference in your blood chemistry. It's one of those things that's simple, but incredibly difficult, because our entire economy is basically built on wrapping things in oil-based film. But if you want to avoid the slow-motion poisoning route, checking the labels on your personal care products is apparently the way to go. Finally, we need to talk about the hidden rules of artificial intelligence. It turns out these models are operating under system prompts, secret instructions given by the developers that guide how the AI behaves. These rules are there to keep the bots from infringing on copyrights or spouting biased opinions that would get the company sued. The problem, obviously, is that we don't know what those rules are. We're interacting with these tools every day, but we're only seeing the output, not the secret sauce of instructions that are filtering that output. It's another layer of opacity in a world that's already feeling pretty hard to read. So while we're trying to figure out if our chatbots are lying to us, the hardware they run on is becoming the most valuable resource on the planet. The semiconductor market is currently in what analysts are calling a melt-up. According to recent market reports, the surge in chip stocks is now outpacing the dot-com bubble of 1999. The difference this time, however, is that the rally is backed by actual revenue. We aren't just trading on vibes and clicks anymore. Companies are showing massive profit growth, driven almost entirely by AI demand. Samsung's valuation has surged, alongside other major players in the space. It's a gold rush, but it's making things difficult for anyone who actually builds hardware. The demand is so high for GPUs, CPUs, and memory chips that it's creating a massive supply squeeze for consumer electronics. Case in point, Nintendo is reportedly planning to hike the price of the Switch 2, and they're already forecasting a dip in sales because the components are just too expensive to source right now. It's the classic shovels during a gold rush scenario, except the shovel makers are now charging so much that the miners can't afford to dig. We're seeing a clear trade-off where the gains in the semiconductor sector are coming directly out of the margins of companies that actually make the products we use. Speaking of big winners, the University of Michigan's endowment is sitting on a massive windfall. Records from the ongoing legal battle between Elon Musk and OpenAI show that the university made an early $20 million bet on OpenAI. That investment is now estimated to be worth roughly $2 billion. It's a staggering return, and it's likely going to change the math for how university endowments look at venture capital, especially as these institutions start funneling more money into things like the NIL market for college athletes. On the technical side of the industry, the way software is actually being built is shifting toward what's being called spec-driven development. At companies like Notion, engineers are moving away from manual coding and toward a workflow where they dictate an idea into a voice-to-text tool, which AI then formats into a technical specification. From there, AI agents like Codex take that spec and autonomously generate the code. Notion uses an internal system called Boxy that lets engineers trigger these AI agents directly from comments. The goal here is to let senior engineers spend more time on architecture and less time on boilerplate toil. But there's a catch to this high-speed automation. For AI agents to actually be useful, the continuous integration, or CI pipelines, the systems that test and deploy code, have to be incredibly fast. If an AI can write a feature in 30 seconds, but the company's testing pipeline takes 30 minutes to run, the AI's speed is irrelevant. We're reaching a point where the bottleneck isn't the human brain anymore. It's the plumbing of the software itself. Finally, we're keeping an eye on the broader economic picture. This week, the Consumer Price Index report is expected to show inflation is still a factor, driven by energy prices and global conflict. This comes as analysts discuss potential successors to Jerome Powell at the Federal Reserve, with Kevin Warsh frequently cited as a top contender for the role. Between the chip shortage hitting consumer prices and a potential change of the guard at the Fed, the AI boom is about to meet some very real-world friction. Now, if you want to see where money is actually flowing into something tangible, look at the WNBA. The WNBA just wrapped its opening weekend, and the numbers coming out of the league's new expansion markets are massive. In Toronto, the Tempo sold out their 8,200-seat arena for their inaugural game, seeing a huge spike in merchandise sales and media interest right out of the gate. Out west, the Portland Fire drew over 19,000 fans for their opener, which officially set a new WNBA record for an expansion team's first game. Look, we've known Portland was a women's sports town because of how the Thorns draw in the NWSL. But hitting 19,000 for a debut is a statement. It's clear the league isn't just growing. It's hitting a level of cultural relevance where these expansion teams aren't just new businesses, they're immediate anchors for their cities. Over in the NCAA, the board has formally expanded the men's and women's basketball tournaments. They're rebranding the first four as the opening round, and moving those games to multiple cities to try and force a new reality. The tournament now starts on Tuesday, not Thursday. The NCAA is basically trying to manufacture a new tradition by sheer force of marketing. They want to kill the idea that the first 2 days are just a preamble, but they're fighting decades of fans calling out of work on Thursday morning. Plus, there's a real structural problem here. With the Power Four conferences now using revenue sharing to pay for top talent, these extra tournament spots might not actually help the mid-majors. In the NBA, Jimmy Haslam is taking on a larger operational role with the Milwaukee Bucks. This shift is happening right as reports surfaced of an extortion plot targeting his business partner and co-owner, Wes Edens. It's a messy backdrop for a leadership change, but it looks like Haslam is stepping in to steady the ship, while Edens deals with whatever the hell is going on in his personal business dealings. Meanwhile, FIFA is already mapping out the 2026 World Cup. They've announced plans for opening ceremonies in each host nation and a celebrity-heavy tribute on July 4th to mark the U.S. 250th anniversary. It's the usual FIFA playbook. Take a soccer tournament and turn it into a bloated, star-studded variety show to maximize the cultural significance and the ad rates. Finally, if you're looking for a job in a front office, the vibe has shifted. The industry is moving toward master generalists, people who can handle private equity-style bottom-line pressure rather than just sports people. Interestingly, AI isn't actually taking the jobs yet. Instead, teams are pivoting to training existing staff on how to use AI tools without breaking anything. It turns out knowing how to prompt a chatbot is the new knowing a guy who knows a guy. And look, here's the thing about the productivity data coming out of the tech sector. Mark Andreessen is reporting that AI has moved past the novelty phase and is now functioning as foundational infrastructure. According to Andreessen, real-world usage data, specifically in software development, shows that AI is already driving massive productivity gains, despite public polling that suggests widespread fear of the technology. He notes that developers using these tools are becoming more effective and seeing higher compensation. Andreessen also claims that companies currently conducting layoffs are using AI as a convenient scapegoat for what is actually a correction of past overstaffing. He argues the long-term result won't be mass unemployment, but a shift toward builders who use AI to create entire products solo. It's a convenient narrative for the Valley. It's much easier to say you're optimizing for the golden age of human capability than to admit you overhired during a low interest rate fever dream and now need to fix the margins. On the individual level, David Epstein is arguing in his new work that productivity and creativity actually require strict constraints rather than total freedom. Epstein points to multiple discovery events, like the periodic table or the theory of evolution, where breakthroughs happened because people were working within the rigid boundaries of existing science. He cites Dmitri Mendeleev, who only mapped the periodic table because he was forced to organize elements for a textbook and needed a clear, constrained way to explain them. Epstein also highlights satisficing, a concept from Nobel laureate Herbert Simon. The idea is that in a world of infinite options, trying to find the optimal choice leads to paralysis, whereas setting a good enough boundary allows for actual movement. He uses the tech company General Magic as a cautionary tale. They had unlimited talent and resources, but failed because they couldn't prioritize. Not for nothing, but there's something deeply satisfying about the idea that having fewer tools might actually be the reason you finally get the work done. Or maybe that's just what we tell ourselves when the budget gets cut. So maybe the move today is to stop looking for the perfect solution and just find one that's good enough to get you through the afternoon. Stay sane out there.